have played it. New York, London, Paris, Munich, everybody talk about
Reaching Up with Don Fess. Don Fess.
This is Don Fess, and we're reaching up again right now. All together in 204 countries with great in-person guests and music.
This is Eric Bain, a senior pastor of Eastside Foursquare Church on Reaching Up Radio.
Eric, thanks for being with us today here in Portland. But let me start off asking you, are you from Portland? And if not, how did you come to be here yourself?
Well, actually originally from Arizona, but moved up to Michigan to do my graduate work and then started pastoring in Seattle. Pastored there for 14 years, and when God just in 2002, we really sensed a change that God wanted us to do something different. And so in 2002, my wife and I ended the ministry there in Seattle and just came over here to Portland to start something new. We didn't know what God was going to do. So that's how we got to Portland, is just really God say, leave the land that you know and go to a land that I will show you. And Portland was the land that he was showing us.
And, of course, you know, and my listeners know, the same thing's now happening to me. So.
Right. So we both come to a land, God says, leave the familiar and go to a land that I will show you. And so maybe Portland is the promised land.
Now, when you came here, did you have an idea that you wanted to do something very different than a traditional church?
Yeah, I had pastored his traditional church for 14 years, and my sense was that God wanted us to do a new model of ministry, something that would be more out of the box. And so one of the things that we just wanted to do was to see if we could be a place where people were at and could connect with people in more of a marketplace setting. But we didn't really quite know what that would look like when we moved here. We didn't have all the pieces together.
I've got to ask you, because there's a guy I know, maybe you know of him too, Pastor Kung Hee of City Church in Singapore, who also talks about bringing the church into the marketplace. So let me ask you, before we get into specifics of what you did with your church, what that marketplace appears to be in terms of Christianity, spirituality. How do you bring something into the marketplace? Because I know people are going to hear marketplace and they're going to think, oh, commercial.
Mm-hmm. Well, the marketplace really is the world. So anywhere that people are frequenting, so restaurants and hotels and health clubs, it's day-to-day living. Marketplace just isn't limited to one segment, but it's wherever people are going. The church traditionally has built a building on a corner and said, come and see. And that's been the challenge for the church, is people aren't coming and seeing anymore. So we have got to go to them. That's the difference. That's what marketplace ministry really is. It's what Jesus did. It's going into the world and doing life to life with people wherever they happen to be.
Okay, so you get to Portland and you're listening to what the Lord tells you to do, and you're getting a vision. Then what started to happen?
Well, we arrived in Portland, and we started kind of gathering a group of people around us. I'd go to coffee shops and introduce myself to people, and they would say, what are you doing here? And I'd say, I'm here to start a church. And they would say, well, what kind of church? And I'd say, I don't know. And they'd say, where are you going to have the church? And I'd say, I don't know. So we soon became the church of I don't know, but just follow us anyway. And pretty soon a group of people, 20, 30 people, started gathering around and started saying, you know, we just started doing life to life together, which basically meant we'd eat together. So we'd eat together and just, you know, have a good time in fellowshipping. And we took up an offering, of course, because anytime the church gathers, we always take up an offering. And I realized that there's not going to be enough money coming in to cover my salary. So one of the guys that was attending our church had a hospitality management firm. And I approached him one day and said, hey, I'm going to need to get work. And he said, well, why don't you come on in and help me with operations? And so I came in and helped him as director of operations for the hospitality management company. And we had hotels. And in having hotels, we'd go around to those hotels and notice that churches were renting our hotel rooms. They were renting the meeting space and paying us money every Sunday. And our guests weren't being impacted. And I thought to myself, well, there's something wrong with this picture. The church is renting from us, and we're putting the money in our bank accounts. What if we turn the tide on this, and the church owned it, and then the church took all the money that it makes and puts it back into social service programs such as shelters, feeding programs, recovery programs. I mean, there's so much out there that has difficulties being sustained. And the problem with nonprofits is not that they don't have vision. Nonprofits have vision. The challenge is we haven't answered the question of how do we sustain them long term. And so we're trying to do it off a donor model. We're saying, but the problem is the donor model dries up, whereas the business model is a model that doesn't dry up. It continually reproduces. If you have a product that you can sell, people buy it. So the way I like to look at it is you can take a unsaved dollar one day and turn it into a saved purpose the next day. So that's kind of how this whole thing started getting birthed. And I went to our broker and said, hey, I would love for the church to own a hotel and for people to come to the church, and then we would use the money for social service endeavors. And he said, hey, I've got just the property for you. It's up on the corner of Sandy Boulevard in Columbia. It's an old Travelodge hotel. Needs a little work. He lied. It needed a lot of work. And so we approached the people who owned it and asked if they would sell it to us. And they said, sure. They couldn't wait to get out of it anyway. And from that point forward, we bought that hotel. And then we remodeled them and reflagged them into a Quality Inn and Suites and a Roadway Inn. And ran them from June of 2003 till March of 2010. We ran those two hotels, moved the church in there, started many, many, many social service programs, job training, homeless shelter, recovery programs, six church plants out of there, started six churches, micro lending, just all kinds of things. And we had more than 100,000 guests come through our hotel and stay with us in the time that we own the hotels. And we had more than 3,500 first-time decisions for Christ as a result of all the ministries combined that all got birthed out of this place called a hotel. It was just amazing what God did.
I want to tell my audience what I told you before we started doing the interview, that I had only been in Portland one time before, mm-hmm. Last spring, and ironically, that's where I stayed for 5 days.
Yeah, amazing. And we're running across more and more people that's the case. And we still get letters today that's where they stayed. It became, you know, so someone would be driving along and they would see a Quality Inn and Suites pull off, thinking that they were going to get a room for the night, and the next day having left with salvation. So not only did we give them a good quality room where to sleep, but we gave them the gospel message of who Jesus was. And many people turned their lives over to him and made decisions to follow him.
Now, last a year ago this spring, there was a fire, right?
Correct. Yeah, in March of 2010, a fire happened and destroyed the sanctuary auditorium area, coffee shop, and pretty much all the place where the ministry transpired. The hotel, fortunately, wasn't touched by the fire, but all the ministry center portion was touched and completely destroyed it. And then as a result of the fire taking place, it wasn't very long after that, our denomination that we were part of, really having now gone through a recession and needing to really limit their liabilities and take a look at their assets, made the decision to go ahead and sell the hotel at that point in time. So it wasn't our decision. It was really out of our hands. But, you know, again, nothing like this takes the Lord by surprise. It was a devastation for us personally, locally, because we had put so much time and work and energy and our heart into that it felt as though, in some senses, that God had just put the vision before us, allowed us to do it for a little while, and then took it away. And so that's kind of how it felt. And so we kind of went through that for about a year of licking our wounds and saying, okay, you know, what's next for us?
Now, I know you told me, and later on we will talk about the fact that you do have new plans.
Oh, we do.
But before we get to that, you talked about your vision to do social service, social justice programs. A lot of churches, including very big churches, talk all the time in sermons and away from the pulpit about Acts 2 and the Sermon on the Mount and all that. But they really don't do very much in terms of helping the least of these, if you will.
Right.
where did, well, I know it came from the Bible and it came from Jesus, but personally, what made you want to, as a pastor of a church, get into all this in terms of lots of ways of helping people?
Right. Well, I think if you, you know, again, like you said, if it comes from the Bible, if you don't have a global context of the poor and the impoverished, but, you know, Jesus said, inasmuch as you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it unto me. And the reality is there's more scripture that deals with how we treat the widow, how we treat the impoverished. And the reality is we're going to be judged on what we do with what God's given us. And so we have a responsibility. But personally, it really came when I traveled to Nigeria. I went over to Nigeria. I saw just the desperate needs that were over in Nigeria and realized, you know, the horrible poverty that exists globally. Not just, you know, there's poverty here in the United States, but obviously, you know, not on the scale that there is in, you know, emerging continents and stuff. And so getting back, I lived in Seattle at the time. And as soon as I landed, I had to, the next day, go pick up a piece of software on the campus of Microsoft from one of the guys of my church. And when I went over there and got that piece of software, I was walking out the doors, and I was taking a look at the campus of Microsoft. Microsoft is a name that is known worldwide. The Windows operating systems, you know, they're in Nigeria. And I'm looking at this campus with, you know, beautiful waterfalls and manicured lawns and, you know, doors that open automatically and, you know, wonderful telephone systems. And I'm standing there and I realize that the wealth of one American company, one U.S. company, could wipe out the poverty of a place like Nigeria. Well, actually could wipe out the entire poverty of the continent of Africa if they wanted to. And I realized here in the U.S. we have so much. And standing there, I really got a subtle feel as the Lord began to speak to my heart. And he said, what would you do if I would give you Microsoft, if the church owned Microsoft? And I said, man, if the church owned Microsoft, Father, I would steward it. I would pastor it well. And that's where the heart of mission-based entrepreneurialism was birthed inside of me. And you become a mission-based entrepreneur not to make money. You become a mission-based entrepreneur in order that you might help other people. It's not about acquiring more for yourself. It's about how are you going to help others. And it was birthed right there in the parking lot of Microsoft.
And you, in fact, not only have worked at all this yourself, but you've also written a book called MBE, which stands for?
Mission-Based Entrepreneur. The MBE Revolution is the title of the book, Developing Economic Engines That Drive Mission-Based Movements. And really, it's the story of what we did with the hotel and why we did it and how you need to have a dream in your heart and how to fulfill these kinds of dreams. But it's so important that we have a mission. You can never put money ahead of mission. Mission always has to be first and foremost. And then when you have your mission right, God will bring the money along. But it's always been my desire to have a self-sustaining place where people have jobs, where people get recovery, where people are trained up and raised up, because that's what we need today. We need hope. And so many people are losing hope. And when I read the Bible, it says that any time that there's a loss of hope, that God always raises up a place of hope, and that's generally with the church.
You know, I'm thinking, and I told you that recently I interviewed Clint Baldwin at the Center for Peace and Justice at George Fox University, 20 miles outside of Portland. And that's what he and I were talking about. But I've also interviewed people like Darlene Check of Hillsong, who's very candid about how she believes the church, with a capital C, has been at the back of the line in many respects about all this.
It has, yeah. There's no question. I think the church has, and the reason is because the church has been caught up in what I call an institutional mindset. Every organization, when they start, any great organization, any great thing that's going to change the world, always starts out as a movement. And sadly, what happens is it becomes an institution. Well, the church started off and acts as a movement. It started off as a mission, you know. When Jesus left this earth, he gave us a mission, and it spread like wildfire across the, you know, across the world. And persecution also helps to spread it as well. But then sadly enough, when it gets comfortable, and then it becomes more about protecting what you have rather than giving it away. So we're more concerned with our bank accounts and being sued these days and our policies and manuals. And it's not wrong to dot your I's and cross your T's, but we're focused in on the institution. So we went from a big C, church, to a little C. It's all about our kingdom on our corner. And as long as we're protecting our kingdom on our corner, we're okay. So therefore, you've got the Baptists in their corner and the Methodists in their corner and the Lutherans and the, you know, and the Assembly of God and the Four Square. You know, we all kind of isolate. And Jesus said that, you know, his prayer was a prayer of unity, that we'd be one. And I think that that's what we've lost, is we've lost that sense of unity, that sense of oneness, that sense of collaborative effort to really be aggressive and forcefully advance the kingdom of God.
Our experience in another West Coast city, which I won't name at the moment, but you know which it is, was that if we would try to develop projects, let's say to help street kids and runaways, mm-hmm. which was an area that I had worked in for a long while, that it was absolutely impossible to get Church A to work with Church B.
Right.
And then not only couldn't we do that, but get Church B to work with Synagogue C. Oh, mm-hmm. Forget that. But you're right. There was a sense that everybody was very territorial.
Right.
How do you get, and can you get, people of faith beyond that, this is my corner?
Well, I think you have to see. You have to see. Now, see, I think we often look at it, but we don't see it. And there's a difference between looking at something and seeing something. I think what you have to do is you have to get the churches to see. They have to see the plight of the person on the corner. They have to see the fact, not just look at the person, but to see it. And that means it goes deep inside of your heart. And when you get Church A and Church B to really see this and to realize that you can't do what I can do, and I can't do what you can do, but together we can do great things. And as soon as that starts happening, all of a sudden things change. And that's taking place, to be honest with you, in Portland. Many of the churches in Portland are coming together. In fact, seasons of service that have been started here in Portland have really begun to change our city. And churches are starting to drop the isolation mentality, and they're really beginning to work together. And this is true community that is developed. I haven't seen anything like this in my 20-plus years of ministry. And a large part of that is due to the Palau Association here helping to pull us together. You always have to have one central place that pulls you together, and that's been the role of the Palau Association here. And they've really done a good job of merging the church together. And it's something that is really catching on, so much so that Christianity Today is coming to do full article on, well, not full article, but a full issue on what's happening in Portland, because it is very unique in a place where most people don't attend church. The church is starting here in Portland, starting to lift its eyes, realizing that we're going to be better together than we are apart. And so we're not trying to compete with each other. We're trying to complete each other.
It's interesting that you say most people don't go to church in Portland. Literally right off the plane, my first week here, I felt that this was in a pretty liberal city.
Yeah.
A much more spiritual place than Northern California or even Los Angeles. And I think I counted that there's, by definition of 2,000 and up, 16, 17 megachurches, mm-hmm. in and around Portland alone, and tons of smaller churches, of course, and 17 synagogues. San Francisco, somebody might want to correct me, but I doubt has 17 synagogues. And lots of thriving Catholic parishes. Mm-hmm. So for a place that's got a reputation, Oregon as a whole, as being a very unchurched place, it seems a lot's happening here spiritually.
Well, I think, you know, that you have to define what's going on, because while people aren't in church on Sunday morning, there is definitely a revival that is taking place. There is, in my opinion, the marketplace is being revived here in Portland, and that's with the Christian Chamber of Commerce that is doing amazing things. Another organization that has moved here, moved their headquarters from Washington, D.C. here, is Nehemiah Project Teaching Biblical Entrepreneurship, literally teaching it worldwide. God has really chosen Portland for something. I don't know what it is, but we're starting to get people from all over the world that are coming in here because it feels like it might be the next place of the greatest revival to ever hit. And that's what we're starting to really sense, is that in a place where not a lot of people attend church on Sunday morning, it's a place where God is really doing something that is bigger than one church. And the reality is our mega church models here are not really that mega at all, not compared to, you know, go back to Houston or to Washington, D.C.
Or Willow Creek or Saddleback.
No, we have nothing like that here. I mean, there's just... It just doesn't exist here in Portland. I mean, they're big churches, but not with the attendance of these kinds of churches. These churches wouldn't even hit the map on that. So it does tell me that God has chosen something small and insignificant from the world's eyes to birth something that only he could do.
Well, of course, you make me even more excited that that I'm now I still don't know what to call myself, a Portlandia, something like that.
Well, you can call yourself an Oregonian.
You are still running social service programs, right?
Well, we are. But, you know, our social service programs are each run by the person who started those. So, for example, Freedom House, started by a great man, Jim Cottrell. He's running that over in Vancouver right now. So we've all kind of had to break up. We used to all be together. But our heart is to, again, find another place, and it looks like the Lord's opened that up, in which we can go to bring many of us together in one place to create what we are calling the Hope Campus, because we want to get us back together again, or not just those of us who've been together, but also new faces coming to the table as well in creating a center of hope.
And define that some more, because you do have a campus pretty much in mind now and that you're working on.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, just last week we signed an offer with Oklahoma Christian in their old Cascade College campus here in Portland. And Cascade College was a college that operated for many years in training ministers, and they've got a gymnasium and student center and many buildings on that, but it's 11.5 acres. And we went over there and walked around that, and there was just a lot involved to try to even get that. And it was a big project because it falls under a lot of politics and impact mitigation plans, and it just was well over my head. But God just kept giving us favor, and last week we went ahead and officially came to terms and agreements on the property and signed, both Oklahoma and us, we've signed on it. So now we're in our due diligence period. But the exciting news is we have major strategic partners coming to the table, including Warner Pacific, which is a college right here, a great college school. And they want to take care of our higher education and adult degree learning program. So they would be moving on to the campus. They're actually already on the campus. The YMCA. We're talking with the YMCA. They want to partner with us, so much so that they want to build a combination YMCA church where we would share one building together, our church and the YMCA, and many other organizations. So we've got some very significant organizations already coming to the table in strategic partnerships and alignments, because I don't want to run away. I'm a pastor of a local church. But they'll do a great job in running the Y. We'll do a really good job in running the church. But together it will become the big C, the big church. And we see this as a center of hope, a campus of hope, 11.5 acres of 50, 60 social service agencies working together for the common good of bringing hope to Portland. In fact, so much so that we're coining a phrase, changing a community, changing a city. We think if you change a community, you change a city. And so we're going to change an 11.5 acre community and the people around that, and then we believe that it will change our city. And we've just got to start having eyes towards the horizon of change. And as soon as that starts taking place, people start getting hope. And it's just so amazing to watch somebody that has no hope in their life. The moment it sparks, you can tell. And they light up, and it's just amazing to see what God does.
You of course, we were talking about churches working together or not, but now you're talking about all kinds of organizations working together, and that's always been my vision too. I mean, it makes sense. That's the way it should be. And if you're talking about a campus of hope, you're obviously talking very holistically about ministering to people's mind and body and spirit.
Exactly. In fact, so much so that it's our vision to not only take care of them physically, where they can exercise and so forth, but have nutritionists there and offer classes in the area of nutrition so that people know how to eat. We've got another program where kids that have not completed high school will be able to get a high school diploma, not a GED, but a high school, a real, actual high school diploma. And so that we can, because if you don't have your high school diploma, so many doors close for you. So it's, you got to look out at the entire need of a person. Because the reality is, poverty is a mindset, and addiction is a mindset. It's not what I'm putting in my arms. It's not the fact that I'm hungry. It's not the fact that I don't have a home. It's my mindset. And a lot of times it starts early on. If we can get a early learning center and get the kids from birth through kindergarten, get them to learn how to eat right, get them to start thinking right, take them through an educational process so that they start thinking correctly, we can change people. The problem is people stay in their old mindsets, and it's their old mindsets that trap them.
Of course, another way to, part of the picture of giving people hope is also to tell them and to minister to them spiritually that there's a loving God who created them and loves them very much and wants the best for them.
Right. I think we have a strong philosophy here at Eastside, and the philosophy is this, that belonging always comes before believing. The traditional church has said, no, you believe, and then we'll let you belong. And we've turned that around. We said, no, we want you to belong first. With all your hang-ups, with all your sin, with everything of who you are. And then when we're in relationship together, through the relationship, we'll ask you to believe. So let's take care of people first and foremost. Let's see people as human beings with great needs. Not something that we're trying to get from them, but in that place of relationship and developing that place of relationship, they can come into a saving faith of who Jesus Christ is. So first and foremost, look at the person and their needs, and then in that relationship, ask them to believe.
Eric, time's limited today, as it always is, but I know we're going to have to do a part two to this interview sometime soon, and I certainly look forward to hearing your progress with this new Campus of Hope as well.
Well, we would love to keep you posted, and thanks for doing the interview today.
This is Don Fass. Join us next weekend and keep reaching up.
And be sure to tell us where you're listening. Write me at reachinguprradio@gmail.com. reachinguprradio@gmail.com.
This is the Celebrate Radio Network.
Radio Network.
From Seattle to Paris, Bangkok to Jerusalem.